Falcoholic podcast listeners, welcome to another episode of the Falcoholic Live. I'm your host, Kevin Knight, here to bring you the next in our exciting series of content, which is going to be live training camp recaps of the day's practices and events. We're going to be doing these for the first week of training camp, as I am on site for the practices themselves. We'll hopefully be able to record some of these from Flowery Branch, but we'll have these coming out every day over the first week of training camp, and then also coming over the remainder of the off season. So we hope you enjoy these new live recap shows, and we're going to get them out in podcast format as quickly as we can for folks who prefer this format to enjoy them as well. So thank you guys for all that you do. Be sure to also check out the Falcoholic Live on YouTube, 8:10 p.m. Eastern time on Wednesdays, and also these are going to be live immediately following training camp practices over the next week. So thank you guys very much for listening. Fellow Falcoholics, what is up? Welcome to our first training camp recap for the Falcons of the 2021 NFL season. I am, of course, your host, Kevin Knight, at Falcoholic Kevin, in process here. Apologize for the brief delay there. Just getting some stuff sorted out here in my my new digs while I'm at training camp. So we appreciate your patience, guys. With me today, as you can see, he is Adnan Ikic at Say Which Way. Jason says Adnan looks like he just got back from the gym or mowing the lawn. Yeah, guys, thank you for tuning in for our training camp recap. We are going to be covering a number of topics today that we heard about at camp. We didn't have an official representative at camp today. As you guys, I'm sure, are aware, you know, COVID is still a thing, so they are limiting the number of people who can be at training camp on a given day. Yeah, Adnan, again, tell the people how you're doing on this fine, auspicious training camp kickoff day.
I'm doing well, very hopeful. I have not been around the past month. I went into hibernation for the end of the dead period, so that I'm ready with the takes for NFL season, and I'm back just in time for training camp.
Exactly. Very fortunate timing to return. Almost like it was on purpose. But yeah, guys, we do definitely have some info for you. A lot of stuff went down today. Nothing earth-shattering necessarily, but we do have some updates, some health stuff going on. We can tell you guys about a little bit more information about the guys that ended up on the physically unable to perform list, otherwise known as the PUP, to start camp. So we're going to get to all of that here in a second. But otherwise, guys, thank you for tuning in. Please do like, subscribe, all that good stuff, and check out, you know, all the links and stuff that we have in the chat, you know, for the Patreon and all that, if you haven't checked that out yet. But let's get right into some training camp talk. First thing, and it's the big one, is the injury updates. We did obviously hear yesterday that the Falcons have three players starting out on the physically unable to perform list. That is Matt Gono, which was not a surprise considering we knew he had some sort of offseason surgery, although we still don't know what the nature of that surgery was. And then two surprising ones, Caleb McGarry, the starting right tackle, and Deidrin Sanat, the defensive tackle. And it's important to note that we, like, don't necessarily know much about these guys. Obviously, Gono showed up to camp wearing a neck brace, so, you know, there is some speculation there that it's like a neck, spine, something. We don't know. Arthur Smith, who has been very tight-lipped about injuries, did make it clear that Deidrin Sanat's injury is an upper body injury of some kind. And McGarry, he was very, very vague about, only to say that he would be returning, quote, sooner than later, but didn't want to put a timeline on it. So, Adnan, any of these, I mean, obviously we didn't know about Sanat or McGarry, but let's start with McGarry, seeing as he's the nominal starter. What's your level of concern about McGarry's injury at this point? It's only the first day of camp. It doesn't seem like it's going to be long term, but what are your thoughts on this development so early in the offseason?
On a 1 to 10, my concern is maybe a 7. just because Arthur Smith said outright that he should be back sooner than later, or at least sooner than Matt Gono and Deidre Sinnott will be back, which I fully expect both of those guys to be out for the first 6 weeks of the season, as PUP rules indicate when we get into the regular season. With McGarry, I'm concerned because he needs the reps within training camp. Like, Caleb McGarry is going into year three, but the first 2 years haven't exactly been very strong for him. This first season he was an abject disaster. In his second season he was a little better, but there's nowhere to go but up, given how bad he was in year one, giving up the most sacks in the NFL among all offensive linemen. So I really would have liked to see him get these training camp reps as much as possible, because he is going to be maybe the biggest key within the offensive line this year. And I went over this on the podcast with the DW, which was published a couple days ago, previewing the offensive line. Chris Lindstrom and Jake Matthews are going to be solid, maybe even Pro Bowl level. Matt Hennessy is a question mark. Left guard is a question mark, depending on no matter who starts at left guard. So you really need Caleb McGarry to have the best season of his career thus far, and the best season by a wide margin, I would say, because you cannot go into 2021 with three minus level starters. And that's pretty much what McGarry's been the past couple of years due to his inconsistency. You need at least three plus level starters for this offensive line to work, because it doesn't matter how good Arthur Smith's scheme is. It doesn't matter, what a wizard he is in the red zone. None of that will matter if the offensive line just shits the bed, so to speak. So we really need, I really don't like the Caleb McGarry's out, but given the fact that he'll be back by week one is comforting, but we really, really need Caleb McGarry to take a big step forward this season, and this is not a good start toward that.
Yeah, I agree. It's disconcerting. I mean, the best, case scenario is probably that it's maybe a minor conditioning thing or some sort of minor injury. Maybe something they found during the physical that they're just sort of kind of like, all right, just take it easy to start camp. We're not going to start you out full reps. Just kind of take, a week or so. Obviously, we don't know, so it's only speculation at this point, but we're hoping that it is minor. And, with Arthur Smith saying that it is a sooner rather than later thing, hopefully it is more like a conditioning versus like some sort of long-term concern. Matt Gono, we weren't surprised about, but it does obviously suck to lose such a capable swing tackle. And then Deidre Sinnott, total surprise. He was going to be kind of fighting for his life on the roster with a new regime. This obviously doesn't help things. I mean, I don't know basically how he makes the roster at this point. Defensive tackle was already kind of going to be a bloodbath where they were going to be cutting some capable players no matter what. So with him not able to even compete in camp at all, I just don't really see how that's going to work out well for him. And it's unfortunate because I think he did have a chance to impress the new staff and maybe stick around, get a chance that he didn't really get, strangely, under the staff that drafted him in the third round. But we'll never know about that storyline, I guess.
I'll always appreciate the amount of content that we've gotten from the Deidre Sinnott tires, the amount of mileage we've gotten from that on this show the past few years, just talking about him and why he's not playing and why, he's not getting any sort of a chance. I agree. I think he's his time on the roster, he's on borrowed time at this point, to the point where when he gets off the PUP list, I would not be surprised at all if they just cut him the way they did with Rashid Hageman a couple of years ago. But it's been a hell of a ride, Deidre.
Yeah, it has. It's and I would think that he probably has a chance to catch on somewhere. It's just the whole odyssey has been strange, to say the least. But with McGarry and Gono out, there was a big question mark about who was going to be at right tackle. I listed off about, seven guys in my tweet, and it ended up being none of those guys. It ended up being, which is my fault for not listening, but Jalen Mayfield is actually starting at right tackle now with McGarry and Gono out, which it shouldn't be shocking because he did play right tackle in college. He was a very good college right tackle. That is his natural position. It was kind of based on what we heard and what we were told. Mayfield was kind of expected to transition to guard athletically and size-wise, that it's a better fit for him long-term. But with such a dearth of offensive tackle options, it may be something that the coaching staff wants is to just, look, let's just plug Mayfield in. We know he should be comfortable here. So what are your thoughts on Mayfield starting out his Falcons training camp at right tackle instead of competing for that guard spot right off the bat?
I'm shocked. Like, I'm legitimately surprised because, you know, reading the tea leaves and listening to everything around Jalen Mayfield and the pick, it sounded like you said, you know, he is going to be kicking in and competing at left guard even as early as this season, because the left guard options, just like the right tackle options beyond Caleb McGarry, are pretty much non-existent. So the fact that Jalen Mayfield is spending his time at right tackle, and versatility is always a good thing with young offensive linemen. You like them to be versatile. But I'm surprised that they're making this move, because if he sticks at right tackle for the next number of weeks, first of all, he's not going to start at right tackle. Like, that's Caleb McGarry's job when he comes back, and it should be by week one. If he continues to play right tackle in McGarry's absence, and if that absence is extended, that takes away any chance of Mayfield playing left guard, not just to start the season, but at all this season. He needs to get as many reps as possible in that position, given the fact that he didn't really play that position the majority of the time while he was in college, for him to possibly transition into it sooner rather than later. And maybe this is just the coaching staff admitting that, all right, we're just not planning on Jalen Mayfield playing this year unless it's in a very dire emergency situation. So I'm surprised that the new signing, Spriggs, wasn't the day one training camp starter running with the ones at right tackle.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it shows that maybe they do view Mayfield as a possible swing tackle, or just a guy that they think can play multiple positions. And, you know, I think they probably were hoping to have him factor in at guard this year because that's where the big hole is on the roster. But look, he knows how to play tackle. He can play tackle. We'll see if the size concerns and the athleticism limitations, which at guard, he's actually a very good athlete. At tackle, you know, fairly average. So it'll be interesting to see if, you know, McGarry's absence early on here kind of pigeonholes him into the swing tackle role, because we have no idea when Matt Gono's coming back. It sounds like maybe it'll be sometime this season, but it's not going to be to start the season, so they'll need somebody there. I agree with you. Like, I think, you know, we'll see Spriggs there at some point. But again, like, Spriggs got to the facility like a couple days ago, so maybe they're just like, look, he doesn't know the playbook yet, he doesn't know the plays, like, let's give him a few days, maybe a week, to kind of get settled, and then we'll plug him in and see what he can do. But I mean, outside of Spriggs, I mean, it's kind of just a list of guys, you know, William Sweet, Willie Beavers, who transitioned to guard and maybe is going to transition back to tackle now. You know, we have an undrafted free agent, Keon Smith, who I think is, like, interesting. But, again, it's Jalen Mayfield right now. Like, and maybe Jason Spriggs in a little bit. But at this point, I mean, yeah, I'm just...
Basically, we really need this to be the healthiest unit in the NFL. And even if they are, they're probably still going to be below average. But there is no depth on this, especially with the tackles beyond Matt Gono. I don't know how big of a believer you are in Spriggs and the fan base is in Spriggs. But, you know, if McGarry doesn't play well, or if he or Jake Matthews go down, then, you know, it's going to be very, very rough, to say the least. Yeah. With one of those tackle positions.
Yeah, I agree. It is it's going to be a tough spot. And I think, you know, I don't know if the signing of Spriggs right before camp kind of indicated that they knew there was a problem with McGarry, or if they were just kind of looking to upgrade, you know, their tackle depth because it was pretty bad behind Gono and I guess Mayfield. But yeah, I mean, it's.
But one thing that surprises me is we heard some rumblings about Gono's injury, what, a week, 2 weeks ago. I'm surprised that if they knew that he was going to be out for a while, and they know, their medical personnel knows.
Yeah.
Why not make a signing for a Spriggs or for one of these potential swing tackles to start the season back then so they can come in, possibly learn the playbook? Because I don't think Spriggs was really, you know, holding the Falcons' feet to the fire in negotiations and, you know, holding out for some big time contract. That's I'm just surprised that they waited this long to make that signing and to do it right before training camp, to the point where, like you said, he probably doesn't know the playbook or anything to for him to be effective within training for a few days.
Yeah, no, I mean, I agree with you. That so that could also be, you know, maybe a sign that they weren't expecting McGarry to start on PUP, because if they thought they had McGarry and they're like, okay, we can kind of, you know, cobble something together with these other guys, you know, if Gono's not going to be here, and, you know, we'll see if we need to either sign somebody else to be the swing tackle, or maybe we can put Mayfield there if he doesn't win guard. But like, this could throw off the whole plan for left guard too, because if Mayfield's not able to get any reps there because McGarry and Gono are both out and they don't trust any of these other guys enough, then that could throw off his whole rookie season. Like, if he maybe had a chance to start at guard and he has to kind of, you know, spend half of training camp playing at tackle while we wait for McGarry to come back, and then maybe gets like half an opportunity at guard, I mean, that's going to potentially throw his rookie season into whack as well. So that's unfortunate. I mean, maybe he just ends up being the swing tackle, and that's, you know, fine for a rookie, especially a third round rookie, to be your swing tackle in year one. I mean, that's not like it's a poor investment, but I think we were really kind of hoping that Mayfield would win the left guard job and we wouldn't be saddled with Josh Andrews this year. But it seems like the Josh Andrews, you know, is inevitable, like Thanos. We can't, he's like Ryan Fitzpatrick, you know, if you sign him, he's starting. So and there's just nothing you can do about that. But speaking of other offensive line updates, I know folks have asked. So we did get the first team offensive line without Caleb McGarry, Matt Gono. It was Josh Andrews at left guard. Not a surprise based on what we heard in minicamp and other reports. Matt Hennessy getting the first crack at center. And then, like we said, Jalen Mayfield getting the first crack at right tackle with those two other guys out. So that is where we are now. Not surprising, but just an update so you guys know. Things obviously could change over the course of camp because this is just day one. We also, before we get too far away from it, this wasn't from today. This was from a couple days ago, but we did have a number of players added to the COVID-19 list, which means they either tested positive or were a close contact of someone who did test positive. So for reference, some of the names on that list that folks should know about, it would be Dante Fowler was the one that got added yesterday. So that's obviously a big one. Lee Smith, the tight end, also getting put on there. And then there were three other guys. I can't remember them off the top of my head. Don't want to say the wrong names. But there were three other guys as well that were added to that list. So obviously we're hoping, you know, for the best for them, that it's you know, not really COVID. And it's just close contact. We just don't know for sure. So we're going to keep an eye on that situation going forward. But yeah, let's talk about some more positive health news. And we'll start with Calvin Ridley. Looks healthy, looks ready to go after his very minor procedure that he had in June on his foot. It was not believed to really impact his availability for camp or for the season, but we did have reports that he looks great, looks healthy out there. And just how important is Calvin Ridley's health for the Falcons, Adnan?
It's huge. Hot take. Calvin Ridley is a very, very important piece on the Falcons' offense, especially an offense that lost Julio Jones this past year. Like, we know Calvin Ridley is going to have to shoulder the load as the number one option on offense, and, you know, pretty much will have to be maybe the best player on the field on offense for the Falcons this season outside of Matt Ryan. And the offensive lineman, of course. This is just talking about skill position pieces. But Yeah, without Calvin Ridley out there, the Falcons' number one wide receiver would be Russell Gage. And, this is a pro Russell Gage
Yes, yes.
show. We like Russell Gage. Russell Gage is someone I've hyped up since his rookie year. He's someone whose progress I very much enjoy tracking, and he's someone whom I've given a lot of credit to for developing as a wide receiver after being drafted as a special teams gunner, and someone whom I thought, he had a ceiling of being a nice slot wide receiver in the NFL, and he's already become that in year three. So full marks, very impressed with Russell Gage, but he is not a number one wide
No.
receiver. And it's going to be rough if you're going out there and he's the guy outside of a rookie Kyle Pitts, who thus far has taken, by my calculations, zero offensive snaps in his NFL career. And combine that with a running back group that's really rather unproven. I mean, Mike Davis, had some good games, but he's been a career backup, and behind him, it's a lot of unproven talent. So, Calvin Ridley is, for his team, I would argue maybe one of the five most important wide receivers in the NFL when it comes to importance to his team. I'm not saying he's one of the five best wide receivers in the league, at least not yet, but definitely incredibly, incredibly important for him to be healthy, for him to be effective, for him to continue where he left off from last year, because Julio Jones was out a lot last season, and Calvin Ridley did step into that number one wide receiver role, and he did a fantastic job of it. And I think that played into the decision to trade Julio Jones, because the brass saw and the brass knew that Calvin Ridley can step into that wide receiver one role. But without him, this offense, at least skill position wise, is maybe probably one of the three least talented offenses from a pure talent standpoint when it comes to just looking at weapons outside of quarterback in the NFL.
Yeah, I agree. And we were spoiled for a long time having Julio and Calvin here, where we could afford really to weather an injury to our top wide receiver or to Calvin Ridley because we had another wide receiver one just kind of sitting there. But this is the reality for most NFL teams. And you go to the Saints right now, right, who don't have Michael Thomas, for maybe a
No, yeah,
quarter
Sean Payton is
more of the
mad.
season.
Sean Payton is just, you can see the steam coming out of his
Oh,
ears in
yeah.
that press conference. He is hot at Michael Thomas, pulling a Scottie Pippen from The Last Dance, just saying, "Oh yeah, I wanted to enjoy my summer."
Man, yeah. I mean, look, we love to see it as Falcons fans, but just look at them for an example. Like, that wide receiver group went from being like, "Oh, it's okay," to like, "Oh my God, this is so bad." Like, and they lost like one of their top, I think Deontay Harris is their wide receiver three. He's probably going to be suspended for multiple games following his DUI arrest last week.
Yeah, it's been a rough offseason. Like, it's
So,
been a rough offseason for the Falcons, but it's nothing compared to what the Saints are going through right now.
yeah, it's rough out there. But I do like Russell Gage. I like the depth guys that the Falcons have, but they need Calvin Ridley to stay healthy and be that wide receiver one. They really need him to be that sort of player for them until Kyle Pitts is ready to kind of take on, a more prominent role. And like, I think we're all hoping he can do that immediately, but I think it's wiser for all of us if we just sort of let Kyle Pitts play a sort of, complementary role early on, and then maybe he can morph into being, the primary threat on offense. But ideally, he has time to sort of, grow into that role and not to be thrust into that immediately because we have, disasters everywhere else. So, so far so good on that. And we're gonna see where that all goes. But all right, another health update. This one also positive. 2020 second rounder Marlon Davidson looks healthy and stacked. Torrey McElhaney of The Athletic reported that Marlon Davidson looks absolutely toned up and like he's been putting in a lot of work. Grady Jarrett also seemed to be extremely happy to have Marlon Davidson back and talked about his work ethic and all the you know, his difficult rookie season and the fact that, you know, Jarrett is really excited to see him back out there. So, Adnan, with the state of the defensive line, we didn't get to see a lot from Marlon Davidson last year. What do you think about the news that he looks healthy and ready to go for his second NFL season?
I'm excited. I went into this year. Marlon Davidson is one of the forgotten Falcons on this team who is going to be a very, very important piece. And I am incredibly excited about his bounce back from his very rough and very unfortunate rookie season where, you know, he had the injuries, he had that bout with COVID, and he was just completely, his rookie season derailed right at the starting line. So this year will pretty much be another rookie season for him. Especially last year with COVID, none of the rookies really got an opportunity to go through off-season workouts, true off-season workouts with their teams. And that stuff it's incredibly important for guys transitioning into the NFL. And it's incredibly important for specific positions as well, quarterback, cornerback, and defensive linemen, especially because those are arguably the toughest positions to transition in toward from mm-hmm. college to the NFL yeah. because, you know, you look at a quarterback, it just needs no explanation. You have to do everything. Corners, you're facing off against much better wide receivers than in college, yeah. and D-linemen, you're facing off against much stronger and much more terrifying offensive linemen than you did in the college game.
Right.
So Marlon Davidson being out for those camps last year and none of the rookies being able to do those camps, that was just an omen of bad things to come for him yeah. personally. Yeah. And this year, if Marlon Davidson can be what we think he can be, and he's someone we took in the second round, he's a former defensive player of the year in the SEC. Mm-hmm. You know, that's going to go a long way in masking some of the flaws of this defense. Like, this defense has no edge. Like, there is no pass rush on this team. It's maybe the worst stable of pass rushers in the NFL, and probably by a good margin. It's going to be very important for Grady Jarrett to have some help along the inside, and that's where Marlon Davidson comes into play to maybe mask that a little bit by getting that interior push. It's something that Mike Smith and Thomas Dimitroff fell in love with, so they never really went after any pass rushers back in the day, and that didn't work out very well at all.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's kind of a history repeating itself here, to where let's kind of hope it works out a little bit better than it did back in those mid-2010 years. Oof. Where the defense was just atrocious. But yeah, Marlon Davidson, if he can be what I think he can be this year, then that's going to go a long way in not – I don't think this defense is going to be top 10. I don't think there's any scenario where this defense is top 10. But at the very least, it could be maybe in the teens, in the early 20s. It won't be in the 30s.
No, hopefully not.
Yeah, hopefully it won't be in the 30s. And I'm saying this as like a best case scenario.
Yeah.
Right? Objectively, this defense could easily just fall out and just be absolutely horrendous.
It could. I think Dean Pease is a better defensive coordinator than the Falcons have had in just a really long time. And this is coming from someone who generally thought, you know, Raheem Morris did a pretty good job when he took things over in the second half of last season. You know, I think he did about as well as you could hope with what he had. But Dean Pease, you know, he hasn't needed elite edge players to make his scheme work in the past. He has needed like competent rotational pieces and like competent starters. So, you know, I think it's unclear at this point if the Falcons even have that. But, you know, hopefully between Fowler, the rookie Ogundeji, Steven Means, and, you know, the next couple guys we're going to talk about here in a second, which is another update we're going to bring you, you know, hopefully they can kind of cobble something together, because I think the interior with guys like Grady Jarrett, Marlon Davidson, John Kaminsky, like, I think they have pieces on the interior that you like, and I think maybe that could be a strength of the defense for the first time in a while, because I think, you know, we could see this team play some more 3-4 looks and get, you know, two sort of 3-4 defensive end like players in there, like, you know, Marlon Davidson, perfect for that role. So is someone like John Kaminsky. But, you know, we'll just have to see. We'll have to see how it goes, because right now the edge group alone looks pretty desolate and scary. So if they could be in the teens by the end of the year in terms of total defense, I think
we're looking at that right now.
I think we're looking at a wild card team for sure if the defense is that good. So you know, so if we're talking about, you know, like high teens, you know, 17, 18, that's still probably enough with this offense, assuming, you know, they don't crater. I think that's enough for this team to be fine. And I think that's all Dean Pease is really trying to get out of what he has, which is like, look, let's just not be a disaster. Let's play sound defense. Let's be aggressive and try to force some mistakes. And I think with a good offense, that could be enough to get things done. So speaking of the pass rush, we did get a little bit of an update on some other guys who might be contributing to that pass rush. We did hear yesterday in press conferences from people that saw him that Michael Walker, the linebacker, had bulked up, added maybe 15-20 pounds, playing closer to 240-245. That would seem to indicate that they do plan to use him more as perhaps a Sam linebacker on the line of scrimmage, doing some pass rushing, which he did a lot of in college. Also today we saw linebacker Brandon Copeland working with the outside linebackers, aka the edge rushers, in drills, and that makes a lot of sense because Copeland has played that role in the past. He played that role with the Jets, had a pretty good season there as a part-time starter in 2018, where he had 5 sacks, a lot of pressures, and a lot of tackles for loss. So, you know, a way to perhaps get over the fact that they don't have a lot of pure edge players that are good is maybe they can get some production from some of these other guys like Brandon Copeland, Michael Walker. You know, we talked about John Kaminsky too, but what do you think about the Falcons using some of these versatile players at edge to kind of bolster the lack of depth there?
I don't think they'll have a choice. Like, just looking at some of these guys that we have on the roster, unless we make a signing, and I mean, everyone's holding out hope for a guy like a Justin Houston, which would be great. Like, you know, I'm all for it. I would very much welcome that signing, but there's just so many question marks with this edge group, and it's the question marks where we're calling it question marks as Falcons fans on, like, covering the team, and as guys who have a lot of hope and a lot of optimism and the best case scenario happening. But it's question marks also in that people who are looking at it who aren't Falcons fans outside of this team would look at this edge group and say it's absolutely disastrous. Mm. Because right now, you know, you have Dante Fowler, who a couple of years ago was really, really good, to the point where the Falcons gave him that very big contract.
Oof.
And I remember writing an article saying that this is the make or break contract for Dan Quinn and Thomas Dimitroff. If this doesn't work out, they're going to be fired, pretty much. And that turned out to be completely true.
Yeah.
But, you know, hopefully you can have Dante Fowler have a bounce back year. And just like with Caleb McGarry, it's not a good sign.
Mm-hmm.
That he's missing the start of training camp. Hopefully he doesn't have COVID, like you said. Hopefully he's vaccinated also.
Hopefully.
But definitely right now you're going to have to cobble some pieces together. And, you know, Brandon Copeland, sure, like, you know, he has
at least
some,
he's had 5 sacks in a season before. You know, that's a lot more than you can say for most of these guys.
I mean, hey, the past few years, someone having 5 sacks for the Falcons, that would be a bright spot.
Yeah,
pretty much. Yeah, that would be second on the team behind the defensive tackle, right? Grady Jarrett, most of the year.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, right now, there's so many question marks, and if Fowler does have another disastrous season like last year, then there's just going to be no pressure on the quarterback unless Grady Jarrett just goes out there and does it himself every single play.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, it's going to be tough, I think, for them to generate pressure you know, they're going to be relying on creating a lot of chaos. You know, I think they're planning to be opportunistic, not necessarily like an elite down-to-down defense. And I think that's going to be really frustrating for fans, because I think they'll have some games where they get 2-3 turnovers and they look great. And I think they'll have some games where they're out there against a really good offense that they can't force into any mistakes, that has a good offensive line. And look, if they've got a good offensive line with a good, settled veteran quarterback like an Aaron Rodgers, you know, they're not going to get thrown off by Dean Pease's pressure.
Yeah. Like, don't get me wrong. Blitz is and creating that manufactured pressure, it's something that we were wanting to see with Dan Quinn for years and years, and he just refused. He was going to rush four, and he was going to do that bland vanilla cover three defense every single time, and he was going to match up man on man, and that just didn't work, and he just didn't adapt, and as a result, he's out of here, and he should have been out of here a lot sooner than he was, because as a result, we had a full-on lost year last season because Arthur Blank was too loyal to him.
Yeah.
However, it's going to be, like you said, it's going to be nice, and that could possibly propel the defense up a couple of spots if Dean Pease utilizes it correctly, and I think he will, because, you know, who am I to doubt Dean Pease? He's been coaching longer than I've been alive, a lot longer than I've been alive, and I think he's going... I think this defense will be a bit better than their talent, just because of Dean Pease's coaching and his coaching ability. However, that cute stuff, those blitzes, that manufactured stuff, it only gets you so far. And when we get toward crunch time, and if this team does possibly find itself in a playoff position, that's not going to get you all the way, because at the end of the day, talent is going to win out. And being able to beat the guy across from you one-on-one, that's what ends up winning in the long term. And that's what ended up winning the Super Bowl for the Bucks last year. That's what you need to get it done. That's not what the Falcons have. And it's gonna be a pretty painful rebuild for the Falcons, at least defensively, to get to that point, because it's not just a one off season thing. It's going to take multiple off seasons to be able to build that kind of unit, at least on the defensive side of the ball. And I don't think that this offense is good enough to really hide those deficiencies on the defense the way it was in a 2016, for example, the way the Chiefs defense was a couple of years ago when they won the Super Bowl. So, you know, this team is at a bit of a crossroads, in that, you know, they can't really hit that reset button because of the disaster that Thomas Dimitroff left on the books. But, you know, you have to try and be competitive, and that's what they're going to do. But I think the final result of that will probably be a pretty mediocre team if you're looking at it objectively.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, I know some fans talked about, you know, what do we think the upside for the offense and defense is. And I think if you think this Falcons offense can be top five, I think there are plenty of outcomes where that happens. Like, I think this offense probably would have been, I mean, top eight if Arthur Smith was coordinating it last year based on his red zone prowess. You know, Dirk Cutter famously awful in the red zone. If all you changed from 2020's offense was the red zone efficiency from the 53 or whatever it was under Cutter to the 75% under Arthur Smith, they would have been, I think, the eighth or seventh highest scoring offense, despite all the problems they had and not having Julio and all this. So, you know, I think the biggest concern offense is the offensive line, and we'll see how that goes. But I think it's possible that that unit is really good, and that kind of carries the team into contention for a wild card spot. The defense, I think the ceiling is a lot lower with the defense, and I think they just don't have the pieces throughout for it to be that good. Defense is much more a what does the whole look like sort of thing. You can't get away with having, you know, really... You can't get away with having weaknesses. If you can get everything on your defense to a solid level and improve some of those things to a, you know, above average to elite level, I think you're going to have a really good defense. But if you have some positions that are good, like the Falcons, I think linebacker and defensive tackle are both good. But your edge group is awful, and your cornerback group is a giant question mark, and your safety group is also somewhat of a question mark. Like, none of those positions can really be bad if you want to have a good defense. So that's why I think that the possibility of them being like a top 10 unit is very unlikely. There's always the chance that they have like a 2012 season where they just get a crazy number of turnovers and, you know, end up being a lot better than they should in terms of statistics. But also on the flip side, Dean Pease has never really coordinated a bad defense. He's coordinated some defenses that, you know, weren't great, that were like in, you know, the sort of like low 20s, things like that. But I think for the most part, we're looking at this defense being somewhere between like best case scenario about league average, worst case scenario, you know, being 25th, 26th, something like that.
Yeah, and turnovers are so random. Like, things could completely break your way with turnovers the way, like you said, they did in 2012, the way they did in 2010, especially. And this team could be, you know, that could result in this team being a lot better record-wise than probably it should be. And, you know, there's optimism that if everything breaks right, this team can win 10, 11 games, especially with, you know, the division being in the state that it's in. Like, the Falcons could be second in this division just by default.
Yeah.
The Panthers aren't doing anything, and the Saints are just having the off season from hell right now.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, you know, that could be a potentially four wins right there just within the division. Not saying that any division games are really going to be gimmies, but,
you know,
I'm not saying that, oh, this team is going to be a disaster. It's going to be below 500. Like, no, not at all.
Yeah.
Like, this team could end up winning 11 games, but, you know, even if they do, and even if everything does break right, there's still a lot of work that needs to be done with this roster moving forward in the coming off seasons. What happens this year, this isn't close to a finished product. And, you know, even if this team wins 10, 11 games, like, a rebuild could still be on the horizon.
Yeah. I mean, it's a process. And, you know, we heard, you know, I think Fontenot kind of bristling at people saying like, oh, well, if you don't believe we're trying to compete now, you know, you just are disrespecting us. But, like, I think we're just trying to be realistic and, like, try to give them some cover for what they're doing, which is that, look, they needed to get out of a disastrous cap situation. They needed to sort of evaluate the pieces they have from the previous regime. And you just can't add enough players in one offseason, especially if you don't have any money to make a complete change that you probably were looking for. I don't think it's... I mean, I think that they are trying to win football games. You know, I don't think they're lying about that. But I think the expectation that fans should have is not that they're, you know, competing for the division title or anything like that. It's going to be really hard to get by the Bucks. I mean, they're just the Super Bowl champions, okay? Like, it's going to be hard to get by them. It's not going to be impossible to steal a game off them. In fact, I think the Falcons probably will, but it's going to be tough this year. I mean, I think the Falcons are going to be better regardless, but I think that better could be 7-10 or it could be 10-7. I think they'll finish somewhere in that range. Obviously 10-7, you know, being a much more exciting positive year, but, like, I think if they go, you know, 8-9, 9-8, somewhere in that range, I think we'd probably be satisfied with that as, like, a, you know, a step forward, as long as, you know, they look encouraging and they do some good things and we see, like, some signs of life and they don't just... Last year was just a barrage of just, it was like every single freaking game we had to come on here and be like, oh, well, they found another way to blow it, and it's like, if they could just not do that, if they could just lose like a normal team where it's like, oh, we just got outplayed today, you know, it was close at the end, but we just like couldn't quite bring it home. You know, that would be nice.
When I was rooting for the tank, that ended up being kind of exciting. Like, oh, how are we going to blow it this week?
We had total confidence. Even Younghoe Koo contributed to the tank, and, you know, what a hero, first of all. But
yeah, like that Chargers game, that was just like, man. All right, you can't really do anything but laugh at that point.
Man, yeah, and Eric gave up on the season after week two. So, oh man, but yeah, I mean, we got a long way to go, guys, before the season starts. There's a lot of training camp left to be observed. A lot of preseason, 3 games of that. So definitely stay tuned here. We're going to be bringing you recaps. It might not be every single day because we might be, you know, actually at training camp. And I don't know what the situation is going to be in terms of if I can record there or not. We're going to find out. Yeah, definitely keep your eyes on the falcoholic.com, on the stream here. I think Adnan and I will both be there Saturday. Is that, are you trying to be there Saturday as well, Adnan?
Yes.
Yes.
Yes, I will be there Saturday and probably Sunday as well.
Yes, so I will definitely be there Saturday, Sunday, Tuesday, Wednesday. Still waiting to hear back from the team about some of the other days. For those who don't know, the COVID protocols that they have mean they have to limit the number of media they can have in attendance every single day. So, we're just sort of trying to wait our turn and, trying, they will work us in some days. We don't know exactly which ones. But, one way or another, we'll be there for the open practices and hopefully some of the closed practices. So keep an eye out for that. But we do appreciate all you guys for tuning in and hanging out with us today. We're excited to have some actual football news to talk about for a change instead of, endless roster speculation, which, to be fair, I think we did a great job of. But after about the sixth show talking about, the best training camp battles, I was like, all right, we need like actual training camp for a change. But yeah, guys, if you don't mind throwing a like, throwing a subscribe at us, we appreciate that. You can check out our Patreon at patreon.com/falcoholiclive to support the show, unlock exclusive perks. And also make sure you follow my co-host, Mr. Adnan Ekic, at Say Which Way. Adnan, anything else you're working on you'd like to plug?
Oh, yeah, I'm going to continue the article series looking at the best moments. We've gotten to the final eight, and it's probably going to be doing that for the next few weeks because it takes a while for people to vote on it. I want to leave voting open for at least a week for each of these final few articles.
Yeah, that one's a lot of fun. I'm excited to see who ends up, which moments end up winning that, because I think there's some pretty interesting ones left. I don't know what direction the fans are gonna go. So we're gonna that's fun. Make sure you participate in that, guys, for sure. And I'm Kevin Knight at Falcoholic Kevin on Twitter. Like I said, follow me there for training camp updates every day. Even if I'm not there, I'll be covering the top our top Falcons people, Tori and Michael Rothstein. Those guys that are going to be there some of the days that we're not able to go, and we'll have updates for you all through camp. And yeah, we're excited for real football, excited for the preseason not too far after camp. So guys, until next time, I'm Kevin for Adnan as well. Thank you for tuning into the Falcoholic Live, and we will talk to you guys real soon when we have more interesting training camp stuff to talk about. Until next time, guys, have a great night.